Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 65 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. Announcements this week. We got two pictures from the Outlander Stars Instagram account. We got the picture of the...
Gavroche.
It's not Gavroche. Does he even have a name? He does have a name. I don't remember what it is. But the boy at the pillory.
It's a boy at the pillory boy. The
pillory boy. I'm positive he has a name. I just can't recall it right now. But the boy at the pillory. It's a great little... I love all these little behind-the-scenes shots that we're getting now. It's like one more, like, glimpse into what we've already seen. So it's just, like, fleshing it out a little bit more. We also got a shot of...
confused Sam. No, he's not confused.
This is obvious. This is the rugby scene when they're all not rugby. Stop it. It looks like rugby because they're beating the hell out of each other. The shinty game.
Oh my goodness.
This is from the shinty game. So they're obviously like choreographing the evil shinty game.
It's like polo without the horses.
Kind of. I mean, it's brutal. It's like field hockey mixed with rugby mixed with
badass Highlanders.
There you go. Kilts, skirts. But of course, Sam is always looking lovely in his puffy blue coat. And as many of you know, because I'm sure all of you were voting, this last couple weeks there's been a fall TV obsession tournament on E! Online. And when I first noticed it, it was down to four shows. Mm-hmm. It was Outlander,
Rain,
Forever, and something else.
And see, I don't even remember this. I just there looked at Outlander and I hit click.
Okay, well, the last two were Outlander and Rain. But yes. I think it was Outlander and Forever against each other. And then it was Rain against one other show, which I don't remember what it was because it didn't win. And then this week, they tapered down to the last two, which it was down to Outlander and Rain, which honestly, there's just no comparison. I know you watch both of them, but there's no comparison because one of them is historically accurate and the other is not.
Well... But to me, that's not even... But they're not being judged on historical accuracy. You're judging them on, are they popular? Are you obsessed with them? Many people like Rain and can suspend their disbelief. I go into Rain having taken courses on Mary Queen of Scots and Elizabeth and Elizabethan England. I know it ain't real. I find it enjoyable. So yes, of course, number one, of course I would vote for Outlander. But I can appreciate Rain for what it is. And that's, to me, an enjoyable show. And I know others, I won't mention names, who do like the show.
No, and people made it to the last two. Now, my issue with the show, and I know this isn't really what we're talking about, but my issue with the show is that I started to watch it with you, the first few episodes. And I was suspending disbelief a little bit. And then when I pulled up, Wikipedia or something, and it said that the king of France, like, died as, like, 15-year-old, and they, you know, he was so much younger than her, I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm like, it was just...
You just lost it after that.
I just lost it. Once I realized how historically inaccurate it was, I just couldn't get back in.
Yeah, see, I'm not watching it for the historical accuracy. I'm watching it to be entertained. And it's entertaining, I find.
I like it. So. I'll stick to my Vampire Diaries. Okay. Live tweeting. Have you ever done it?
I have.
Okay, I have too, and I have a love-hate relationship with live tweeting. I love the interaction of live tweeting, but I feel like when I'm live tweeting, I'm not getting to watch the show as closely as I'd like to. So it's you almost don't get to enjoy the show the first time, I've noticed, at least with me. I don't know about you.
If you're live tweeting the first shot,
yes. The first time you've watched it. So there's this app called GoPop.tv that allows you the experience of the live tweet without actually having to do it live.
Yes, and it kind of reminds me of the 1990s VH1 pop-up video.
Oh my God, pop-up video, every time.
It was awesome!
But what's cool about it is, like, if you think about, like, all those people that you love live-tweeting a show with and getting all that interaction, and there's that one person you really want to know what it's like to watch that show with them, mm-hmm. what kind of commentary they'd have. with GoPop.tv, that's kind of an option now because you can go back and it syncs with the show. If you start it at the same time you start your show, the comments will pop up on your phone or your tablet, synced with the show, so that you kind of get that experience of what the commentary would be if you were live tweeting, only it's on your time
and it's
on
your schedule. So it's actually good for two populations, and maybe we're leaving one out. But one, two that I can think of are people who don't want to miss any bit of a first run of something, or for people who don't have the option of watching it live as it's on, as you know, most people will do it and live tweeting their first viewing, because that's the only way really to sync like a national audience is whatever is broadcast. If you have it on your DVR, who knows when you're going to get to it? But if you have it on your DVR, you can actually mock live tweet stuff with it. So people who can't watch it when it's broadcast, or people who don't want to live tweet with a live broadcast because it's their first time and they don't want to miss the show, and with their attention being totally into live tweeting, because live tweeting is so much fun.
It is fun. It's fun to be part of something, and that's what, for me, live tweeting is. It's being part of something. But this is kind of like getting to have the experience of live tweeting while still getting to have also had the experience of watching the show the first time live without any interruptions and anything kind of bumping in and taking you out of that moment. Because I know that I live tweet a couple shows with a friend, and I'll miss like 10 minutes of the show trying to type out my tweet. Mm-hmm. And then I'm popped back in. I'm like, okay, well, there's 10 minutes of the show that I don't know what happened. But I have to stay on schedule or else I'm going to be behind.
Miss the entire show.
But like I said, this is a great new thing that I don't know how new it is, but it's new to me.
New to us.
But what you can do is you can download the app. For those who have wondered what it was like to perhaps sit and watch an episode of Outlander with Outlander Pod, now you can kind of get a little bit of an idea what that would be, because we have submitted our commentary for this, so it's like having a little pop-up Outlander Pod.
Yeah, it's like a little pop-up Ginger Summer with pictures.
Melange.
And with some links timed. So whether you're adding your own commentary, because we would love to see some of your guys' stuff,
and you can.
Too.
That's the other thing. You can totally add your own comments, and you can like comments.
And there, exactly. And you can leave comments, and there are polls. We've provided some poll questions, which we think are kind of funny. Some are kind of interesting. We find them all interesting, but some are more funny than others, but they're all for fun. And we believe, and GoPop believes, that this helps enrich that experience of the live tweeting without actually live tweeting.
Well, let's talk about it. Droughtlander. We're in it, right?
Yeah.
How would you like to have one more way to go back and watch Outlander and have a new experience?
Absolutely.
And that's another thing that's really cool about this.
So we invite you to download the app, check it out, watch Outlander, because we know you're going to watch it anyway. Watch Outlander with us. Give us your feedback. Give GoPop TV or .tv feedback as well. Follow them on Twitter and Facebook and just check out what they're about. And yeah, it's kind of exciting.
It's not just Outlander.
It's not Outlander. They have a lot of shows
Sherlock
on there. Yes, they have other shows.
Tons
they
of current
Game
stuff.
Of Thrones.
Almost every. If you go on there, I promise you'll find a show.
But
even
we
if you don't even
did,
like Outlander.
We only did Outlander.
Even
only
if,
the first two.
Even if you're listening to our podcast and don't like Outlander, which I don't know how that's even possible, there is a show on there for you, I promise.
Yeah, and it's really unique, we found, and we think it's kind of exciting. So that's the thing that I was teasing about earlier this week that we wanted to share that was kind of fun. And yeah, so check it out and let us know what you think. So now we have, for us, very exciting. We're finally so happy to be able to share with you the second part of our interview with Agav.
Well, the first time you started putting up your How to Speak Outlander videos, you weren't pronouncing your name. It was just your name was showing up.
Why?
And I was like, he needs to pronounce that because I have no idea. My gut was telling me Adam, because there's a D in it, but it's not, and that's pronounced with a G. So I was very excited when it felt like to me you were taking my note and you actually started pronouncing your name in future episodes of that.
I think that was Stars kind of thought it would be quite sensible to maybe do that at least once. And I was like, you're probably right. You know, I take my name for granted, but, you know, to everybody else, it looks like, you know, a series of typos, you know, so...
How would one correctly pronounce your last name?
O'Brien, exactly as it looks.
What were you doing when the production team of Outlander found you? Or did you find them?
Well, I mean, I was working for Ulpan. It was a particular method of learning Scottish Gaelic. And when I was working for them, I had a terrific 2 years there. Really enjoyed. A friend of mine, in fact, ran the company, and it was a fantastic job to have, you know. But I was just starting to get to the stage with it where I was like, I just can't go any further with this, you know. I can't plough any more energy into it because I'm not sure where I'm going or where it's taking me. You know, it definitely wasn't challenging me anymore. And it wasn't a project that I could really put my heart into because it just wasn't creative enough, you know. That was the point about it. So I was looking around, and I had been for a wee while, just to see what was out there. And I just saw an email from the production just saying to Salma Rostig, the Gaelic College up in Skye, you know, we need a guy who can do, you know, a person who can do X, Y, and Z, and A, B, and C. Do you, you know, could you point us in the right direction? And I think I saw a few people, in fact, and I just gave them a phone just to look. You know, I think you need someone fun. I think you need somebody really knowledgeable, but you're going to need someone fun because we're talking about working with cast. We're not talking about people going to uni who want to come out with a PhD. Actors who need to be, you know, they need to feel enthused because it's artistic material they're dealing with. So we need somebody, you know, who's going to be able to inject them with passion for what they're doing for this language. And I was like, look, frankly, I'm your man, so I'm the guy you want. you know, and I thought, ugh, nah, they'll just be like, yeah, whatever, man. But they phoned me back and said, well, come in and meet the producers. And that was it. And as I say, you know, we sat around for a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, having a blether about it, and we both just liked what we heard very, very much. And that was that.
So do you have an average day on set or on production?
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, every day is quite different. There are days where I am literally running from my office to set back to, you know, running out to cast caravans and chapping doors and going, crap, you know, we need to have a quick go over this line, but will I catch you before you're going to makeup, or will I get you afterwards? Or, you know, you can be running around, like, as we say, like a blue-assed fly. you know, and then other days it's very, very relaxed. You're on standby. You maybe got a little bit of translation to do. You might have some sound files to record for cast. You might have a cast appointment. You know, maybe Sam or Duncan or Sam will come in and need to brush up on their stuff. You know, so it's all that sort of a stuff. I get scripts through. They say, look, we want these sections translated. I translate them. I make small adjustments as we go on, but normally send them through pretty much complete. And then, you know, kind of get in touch with cast and just sort of say, well, look, here's what we've got in this episode, and give them the material they need to learn it, which is sound files for each phrase broken down into small sections. Some folk are incredibly natural, of course, with it, as we know. Sam and Grant particularly are really incredibly natural with it. They just picked it up, drop of a hat. So you don't really need to give them much. You pretty much practically leave them to their own devices. Some people, their talents lie in other areas. They're not necessarily linguistically, you know, it's not maybe not where their talent lies. So you need to work a little bit harder on certain aspects of it. Pronunciation, certain sounds can be very challenging. And it also depends, obviously, on where a person came from to start with. If people are from outside of Scotland and they don't have the base accent, as you can imagine, you know, they don't have just have that base coat over which you would paint the color, you know.
So Outlander has released a still shot on their Instagram account of you standing on set with a cue card. Is that something you would do on a normal basis, or was that something special to that day? Or
it's funny, actually, because I just recently that photograph came up again, it's interesting, and I'm quite happy to actually just go on record here because it definitely needs said. That photograph's now out of circulation because although occasionally we will use a board to aid memory when cast have very long sections of language that they've got to sustain throughout the course of a filming day, and it can be extremely difficult to do that in a foreign language, essentially. Mm-hmm. And maintain performance at the same time. So if we can give them help with things to just make their working day easier, then we do. But the boards were very, very rare and were only ever used on two occasions, basically. So I normally rail against the use of phonetics because that's what was on the board. It was phonetic transcription.
Yeah. Yes.
And I'm always one for saying you should not use phonetics because what you're doing with phonetics is you're giving your brain a third thing to learn.
Absolutely, yes.
You're not just learning the structure grammatically, the fact that it's different from English. You're not just learning, you know, the actual words and sounds that are different. You're then learning a third thing, which is a different way of spelling it, which causes mm-hmm. your brain to split in two directions, you know, mm-hmm. Rather than just the one, maybe even three, if you look at it a certain way. So I'm very against phonetics generally. However, as I say, if you've got cast having to maintain, you know, over a few hours filming a particular scene and they've got to maintain their performance, relaxation, you know, then the last thing you want to have them doing is stressing about the language. So the short answer would be, do I use those boards periodically when absolutely necessary as an aid to memory?
I can greatly understand that because one of the things we studied in second language acquisition, a little bit of first language language acquisition, and the unique, I won't say problem, but the unique challenges faced by second language learners is that really, really high, and this is, of course, not even speaking of someone on set. This is just someone in a classroom. You are very cautious of making mistakes.
Yep.
And you want to everything to be perfect. And then I could only imagine, especially because time is money, money is time, and these actors are there for however long.
Absolutely.
And the pressure is even higher. No, they're not necessarily learning a language for, you know, the next job or for the next 20 years.
Yep.
But still, that was your job and their job to learn it to a certain degree to then be able to perform it and not just
exactly.
pronounce a string of syllables. And so it's called the affective filter. In a student in a classroom, one of the things the teacher hopefully wants to do is lower the rate or lower the opportunity for more anxiety because learners are automatically, especially adult learners, are going to want to have everything perfect. They're completely different than children.
Exactly.
And it's just, it really, I want to say night and day, it's still second language acquisition, but it's really, really interesting. So yours and the cast's, those members that had to go through classes and learn some Gaelic,
mm-hmm.
they have a very extremely unique challenge in that not just the high affective filter to try not to make to mess up, their job is tied up in them not messing up.
So it is
an extremely high pressure environment, not only as a second language learner, but also as a to perform it right there.
Yeah, this is the thing, you know, with a couple of the lads who ended up, using phonetics quite regularly. Basically we got to the stage where time's getting tight. You've only so much time to learn this stuff. Will they take the language with them, you know, after they leave and use it on other productions? It's possible. Relatively unlikely. We're talking about guys with full lives, full careers.
Mm-hmm.
So, Let's look at this, right? What happens when you've got an hour of television? Well, you've just got that hour of television. That's it. That's all you've got to say, here's what we did, here's what we achieved. So what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with the time leading up to that? Well, you use it to get the best possible result you can. And that, in the first instance, is trying to get people used to Gaelic orthography so they can read it naturally and pick up the natural rhythms and be able to speak and read the language, at least during those times, almost as native. But if it gets to the point where you're actually going to hinder that possibility by focusing too much on the orthography and the written word, then you just go, boom, out of it. Let's work on how this person's brain operates and we'll figure out a way that is best for them as a person, literally with the way they're actual individual brain operates. And I've actually got a different style of teaching for every single person. We've got a different way of doing it for everyone. And it's just brilliant. It's fascinating. You know, every single person that comes in, they'll have a different way of learning. And it's challenging and it's exciting and it's really pleasurable for me, you know, professionally.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I'd be moderately disappointed if at this point Sam didn't have a little bit more of a natural gauge of the language. If you had Sam on cue cards, I'd be a little disappointed.
No, Sam's never used a card in his life.
You actually have kind of touched on some of these, I believe, but what would you say compared to being in a traditional classroom or with teaching via Skype or online teaching, learning, etc., what are some unique challenges presented by teaching, tutoring, or coaching on a film set?
The challenges are the calendar, because with cast, you are not getting guys who, you know, and it was almost all guys that I've taught, obviously, in the cast. You're not getting guys that have come to you and said, hey, man, I really want to learn to speak the language. You know, when do your classes operate? I'll be there. You know, that's what happens. What you've got is guys who not only have lives, you know, they like to occasionally leave set and get to chill out, you know, and see their families or whatever's going on. Not only do you have that, you have also got people who have to learn how to fight with swords, ride horses, go for costume fittings, get rigged and de-rigged, get driven from their, obviously, accommodation to set to start work. I mean, we're talking about really, really full days. There's downtime, sure, but you can't always predict when it's going to be. Do you know what I mean? So that's the challenge. The challenge is trying to get the time in. And I mean, thankfully, you know, the production were absolutely fantastic with that. They would crowbar in time for me to see people when you thought it was impossible, you know, so it was brilliant that way. But definitely, you know, you're dealing with, obviously, when you're making a film, I mean, you know, time doesn't stop for no man. So you've just got to, you know, you've got to take every single minute and get the absolute maximum out of it. So there's no doubt that kind of high pressure teaching, that kind of sense of, wait a minute, if I don't get this right, this is going to, you know, it's going to make myself and a cast member look ridiculous on screen if we have some kind of gobbledygook, you know, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, that's definitely high pressure. So time is the key. But you learn very, very quickly teaching before you even get anywhere near, well, certainly for me, before I got anywhere near the film set, I learned very, very quickly how key using the time was. So when I got to the set of Outlander, you know, I really was able to hit the ground running.
I imagine you also had the difficulty of, like, day players versus, like, cast members.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, though, guys who were coming in just to maybe dish out a couple of lines, though, I mean, that would normally be quite simple because quite often that might be the only job they had on. You know, I mean, they might have other work coming up, but quite often, you know, they had another job, a day job or whatever, and they would just be getting time off and coming and playing the part. So actually, they would kind of have quite a lot of free time, you know, just to go over the couple of lines that they had. So we had something, you guys will have seen episode 4 last night, did you?
Oh, yes, we
did. Yeah, we did.
Oh, yes, we did.
So you got a couple of our day players in there playing the would-be rapists.
Yeah,
yes,
oh,
we did.
In the hallway, yeah. We were going to ask you a tiny bit about that, but yes.
We had David Walker, who's a very, very accomplished actor, Gaelic-speaking actor from here, playing the sort of, I don't know how to describe him, you know, he was the older one.
Was he the one who was going pee?
I don't know whether that was him or not, but he was the one that said the last thing Dougal before Dougal went, no, you don't, you know.
Was he the one who had the big facial close-up?
Yeah, he was the one on the right, yeah. Now, the other guy, Jake Ferretti, Jake was fantastic. See, Davey is a native speaker.
Oh, wow.
That was never going to be a problem. Davey was terrific, as he always is. But Jake Ferretti, the guy on the left, Jake didn't have a word of the language in his head. From London, came in completely out of the blue, had never touched Gaelic languages in any way, shape or form, and did an incredible job. He was fantastic to work with. It was an absolute utter pleasure to spend time with Jake, and his Gaelic was brilliant. It was really, really, considering the baseline that he came from, that he's got a lovely mild manner, Jake. He's a lovely guy. He's got a lovely mild London accent as well. But coming from that and then trying to hit the, is challenging. And there's an example of a day player that worked his ass off to make sure it was right. So that was a thrill for me to when we went to the cast and crew screen, and I got to see how it all fitted together and how Jake's lines came through, especially because we knew Davey would be brilliant. Davey's a Gael through and through, you know.
Now, would you find yourself teaching the day players differently than you would teach the long-term cast members?
Only in the sense that I would have to learn pretty quick what their style was, because I knew I wouldn't necessarily get maybe too many other sessions, and that's mm-hmm. just that's you know, it's sort of not through the want to see them more. But if somebody was based in London and you're just catching them when they're up for a costume fitting, then you know you've got to work fast. So you've maybe got an hour and a half with them possibly, if they've got a good couple of lines. And again, it's just another situation of really hitting the ground running. And you immediately, the first thing you always ask anybody, do you know anything about Gaelic languages? Have you ever spoken any of them? You know, you build on what they already know. If it's a no, then you say, okay, do you speak other languages? And again, if it's a no, you know, then your options are narrowing all the time, you know, because you're then thinking, okay, if someone already speaks a second or third language, I don't have to open up their brain. I don't have to unpick their kind of like built-in, what they feel is an inadequacy normally, because normally people who aren't bilingual are people who are self-confessed sort of linguophobes almost. Oh, I can't learn another language, I'm rubbish. Normally that's absolute crap. Almost anybody can learn a language to a pretty good degree, you know, unless there's something physically wrong with their head and their brain doesn't function, you know. So, you know, if you get somebody who doesn't have any knowledge of Gaelic languages, who doesn't speak a second language, and who then says that their language ability is rubbish, then what you've got to do is infuse them with confidence incredibly quickly. And, well, there are several ways of doing that I wouldn't necessarily go into because it will take a lot of time, but there are several tricks that you can use to infuse them with enthusiasm, with hope and belief very, very quickly. And it's great if it works. Sometimes it can be a bit of a gamble. And other times it's like, bing, light goes on and they go, ha ha. And then you're just like, okay, this is going to go good.
I was going to say, at what point, if you were teaching me Gaelic, should I assume that you've decided I'm a lost cause? What would be the lesson you'd be giving me with you're like, okay, she's never going to catch on to this. I'm going to give her a cue card.
The thing is, there's nobody that I've worked with on the production who has been any kind of a lost cause, and nobody that was given a cue card because they couldn't do it otherwise. It was simply just the fact that we've got 1,001 things going on at any time in the production, and you know there was no way we were going to get the time to learn huge speeches off by heart. That was a time issue. So it would be, wow, it would take me weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks to give up on anybody. And see, if they really got to the stage of being lost cause, that would be to do with their attitude to learning and not to do with their ability. It's almost always to do with attitude and almost never to do with ability. I've worked with people whose ability is really an inch off the floor and still been able to take them away with something if their attitude is good. If their attitude stinks, never going to happen. They've already defeated themselves before they started. You know,
oh my.
Thankfully, out of Outlander, which has been wonderful, you know, but I'm going to thank my lucky stars that we haven't, because we so easily could have done, you know.
Sure. I think you've shared a picture or two, but I know you've also mentioned on Twitter that you have your own office at the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything in your office or something that you carry with you on location? Because you do travel a little bit or a lot, depending on the need. Anything that you have in your studio at all times or that you carry with you to remind you of your family?
Yeah, I've got a picture of my three of my four kids. It was just one that was taken, one of the school pictures, and I've got that there. And I also have a Valentine's card from my wife that is still on my desk because it's an owl and it's nice and I can't bear to part with it.
That's very sweet.
But on location, no, I travel light. I don't have anything. I don't even have a pencil or notebook. It all goes into the brain.
Okay, this is going to be like one of those questions where you're like, who's your favorite kid? If you had to pick one cast member who was the most natural Gaelic speaker, who would you pick?
I've been asked that before.
But I want the truth this time.
The truth. Honestly, who's actually the most natural?
And I'll be heartbroken if it's not Sam.
I'm afraid I cannot squeeze a horse hair in between Grant O'Rourke and Sam Heughan. Grant possibly picks it up slightly sharper, but when Sam gets it on the money, it's bloody glorious. So, you know, it's like you really couldn't squeeze a horse hair in between those two guys. They're linguistically very, very switched on. I mean, Sam during the justice scene in F2, you know, I mean, you guys are probably sitting thinking, well, that sounds pretty good. But, you know, obviously not knowing whether it really does. But I'm sitting there, you know, thinking, wow, you know, I wonder who taught those guys.
No, see, I want in my brain for you to be sitting in front of however you're watching it with a little tear rolling down the side of your face at the beauty of that moment. Because the lilt that Sam affects when he speaks Gaelic is so, it just draws me in, and I'm like, I don't know what you're saying, but you can just keep saying that all night long.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is the thing. I mean, you know, if Jamie wasn't going to be a Gael, then what the heck was he going to be? You know, because that's well, it's interesting. It's a perspective thing. I mean, so many women I've heard talking about it. It's just all about the, you know, the chivalrous thing, and it's all about like how honest and decent and just, you know, damn beautiful he is, you know. But of course, to me, being a guy who is 13 years older than the character in the book, I'm just loving this young, like, self-confident Gael. You know, this young guy who is a Gael above and beyond anything else. And Sam said that as well. He's like, you know, you've seen it at the Comic Con interview, you know, with Ron and Diana and Kat and Sam and some other, it was Graham and Tobias, wasn't it? You know, and Sam saying, well, look, you know, this guy's a Gael. This is his first language. This, you know, this is one of the most important things about it. And actually, he was saying, you know, if I could have one thing, it would be to just be able, boom, like that, to be able to speak the language fluently. And that, for me, you know, obviously, from where I'm coming from, what my discipline is, what my job is, what my passion is, that's a fantastic thing to have such a terrific hero played by such a lovely guy. Sam's a fantastic guy, such a fine-looking bugger as well. That's fantastic to have that, a true Gael hero, you know, for young people, you know, like what we're talking about earlier on, to look up to, you know. He's so gallant and dashing, and he's so damn Gaelic. It's fantastic.
No, and honestly, I don't think you could have a better ambassador.
Hey, this is it. Absolutely.
Oh, wait, was Sam or Agav?
Well, I was thinking Sam. But...
all of the above. Well, hey.
Agav said he'll take Sam.
Hey, Agav, there's a reason. I mean, yes, you're associated with it, but, you know, as you said, you don't necessarily feel all that comfortable with, you know, being in the limelight, correct?
Not personally.
And fair enough, but out of your love for your job, for the language, for what this is doing for Scotland, for Gaelic, et cetera, and to the world, if you had not, because there are many, many, many people in the production who are not talkative or who are not part of Twitter at all. Sure. If you had not been so giving, and you could be the best teacher ever and just say, you know what, this is my job and I love it and I support it, but I really don't feel comfortable interacting with fans in this medium. And that's fair. Some actors don't do that, and that's absolutely their prerogative.
Sure.
You didn't have to be this way. If you had not, we likely would not have been able to reach out to you. But
sure.
We are just so happy that you are.
Yeah, well, I mean, but, you know, like I said earlier on, I mean, to me, you know, I would find it incredibly difficult to sort of assume some sort of self-importance because of my position. I just feel incredibly privileged to be here, incredibly privileged you know, the production has been so good to me, so patient with me, because I'd never worked on the film set. So, you know, we had to wait till I bedded in and figured out how the heck it all worked, you know what I mean? And they've been fantastic. So, you know, I feel incredibly privileged to be working here. It's been absolutely outstanding. And like I said, you know, to then be able to interact with fans who are so sort of culturally and linguistically aware, you know, for the most part, a heck of a lot more than most people that I meet here. I mean, some of the Outlander fans would really embarrass the crap out of people over here in terms of their knowledge of Scottish history and languages. Do you know what I mean? It's
I understand.
I think that's a positive thing. I can only be. And I mean, I know that sounds kind of a bit crass. It sounds a bit sort of like a bit hard and that, you know. But I genuinely actually quite like the idea of maybe some Scots being slightly shamed into taking more of an interest because there's like all these Yanks over here going, hey, what about this and what about that and wait, how do you feel about this and what about the Gaelic and what about the history? I mean, you know, people go, I don't actually know anything about that. You know, I think it's bloody good if they get shamed in it. So they should be. Come on, you know, wake up and smell the whiskey. You know what I mean?
I think so. I think that's true. But I think we're also about to have an influx of a new kind of Outlander fan.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have right now, and I think up leading up to the last few weeks, we've had mostly the Outlander fans who've been reading the books for years and years and years, as opposed to we're about to now have an influx of fans who've only been exposed to Outlander through the series. So that's, I think it's so important that your role is so important in that, in getting that level of expertise to the layman, if you will.
Well, it's true enough. In a way, you know, I suppose I felt kind of sorry for the people that, you know, so, you know, just diligently stuck to expanding their knowledge out of what they got from the books, which is, you know, so vast to begin with, as we discussed, so much in those books, so many different types of information. But the fact that people, you know, so diligently expanded their knowledge from that, and now, you know, you're almost going to have sort of pop Outlander fans, you know, who have just seen the show. And fair play to them, fair play, you know, absolutely. Yeah. It's a great show and thought, wow, when I get this. No problem, completely understand that. It'd be brilliant. But I almost felt kind of sorry for those diehard fans of the books who've been slaving away for 20 years waiting for this adaptation. You know, maybe they weren't waiting all the time, but certainly it's been... You know, there's been different ideas over the last few years of potential outlets for a television series, you know, and then suddenly, boom, it's like millions of people just go, oh yeah, I love Outlander. And then these people have been reading the books going, yeah, well, you don't love it as much as me because I've been reading the books for 20 years, you know. And I feel for that, you know. I mean, that's probably going to be kind of tough, folk coming in and saying, yeah, I know all about Outlander. Oh yeah, you read the books. What books?
Exactly. But, you know, we have this hope, this deep-seated hope that these people that are watching the show and falling in love with these characters will be like, I want to pick this book up. I want to read this book. This has to be amazing if that's what this has grown out of.
Aye. Well, you would hope so. And the great thing is, of course, they're not going to be disappointed. You know, if they can, obviously, if they've got the stamina, because, I mean, a lot of people these days... You know, when I grew up reading, maybe I was one of the last to that kind of generation. I don't know all that many young people that read unless they're readers. You know, like that's a passion of theirs. I don't know that many people that just read for fun. So, but, you know, things are changing. You know, it's going to be fascinating one way or another. It's going to be a ride.
But what's so lovely about it is that while they may not have the same experience that us book readers have had, I think that they're almost maybe even getting a little bit more.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It's an absolutely instant appreciation with television, isn't it? You know, you boom, suddenly you're transported into the zone straight off. You know, you don't have to build up the vision of the characters in your mind. And, you know, every time sort of Diana shares another physical feature that she hadn't described before, you're like, ooh, that's my kind of, you know, vision of this character augmented. And do you know what I mean? They just get, boom, yeah. Sam is Jamie, you know, boom, Kat is Claire. They're never going to know about the whiskey eyes, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Since we are limited to the four episodes that we have seen thus far, what, if you can remember, so you have episode one, Sasnak, she comes back through the stones. Episode two, Castle Leuk. So that's the big Gaelic scene with the airing of grievances and Colin meeting punishment and deciding on the problems.
That's right.
And episode three, The Way Out. Mm. With the which I wrote in my little notes, I put, there's actually a little more Latin than Gaelic in this episode.
And episode 4, of course, we just saw The Gathering, which there definitely was back to much more Gaelic. Out of those four, if you can remember that far back, it's probably been not quite a year, but maybe, what, 10 months or so since you guys have done some of those things.
We've had cast and crew screenings, though, since then.
Ah, so you've been reminded of those.
Exactly,
got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so out of those four, besides obviously the distribution of Gaelic in certain episodes, is there something that you had a very funny event or a very memorable thing that happened? Just something that you would love to tell listeners about?
I did a little thing for Des Andrews just recently, a little interview for her. And I share this funny thing about John Dahl, you know, thinking that we were having another baby because I was talking about how proud I was of my Gaelic babies, you know. I was talking to the cast, and he's like, "Hey man, what are you still doing here? Get down to the hospital," you know, like. Like, no, man, I said, "I know, because I've got four already. You think it's inevitable?" But so yeah, that was pretty funny. But I don't know. I mean, see, to be honest, my memory is absolutely rubbish, you know.
this general
feeling of like loveliness, because that was the major novelty, and driving into work every morning was fantastic, because it was like, you know, pinching myself, going, is this actually, you know, is it happening, you know? Just a general absolute relish of going into work every day, which I still have now. This is the great thing about this job. Mm. I still feel, you know, it's absolutely thrilled to be there every day. But obviously at that point, it was like this incredible new thing, this new adventure I just embarked upon. So I think to kind of try and pick something out, you know, obviously at that time as well, the learning curve was like that. So learning something new every day, learning how to do things, how not to do things, you know, and everything was just new and exciting.
Social media has been so helpful to even us as a podcast, just with connecting people that you normally wouldn't have that kind of an access to. Twitter's been huge for us. I know that we've been able to interact with you on Twitter. We were able to get contact with Ailey on Twitter.
Yep.
I mean, it's just social media has blown up so much in the last few years that I mean, it's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, there's a lot of Twittering goes on in the background about my Twitter skills in the early days. You know? My page was discovered by somebody. It would be really funny, actually, if there's anybody out there that thinks they were the first one, but they can let me know, you know, it would be interesting, you know. But who was the first Outlander fan to follow me on Twitter? Because once the first one followed me, it was like suddenly I went from 180 followers to about 2,000 in about 6 months.
Hey, I think they call it the Outlander effect. It's just,
I think the reason why, you know, I kind of had to take to it as well as being really happy to, and I've really enjoyed it. The reason I kind of had to take it to it as well is because, well, I had a page on Facebook, obviously, still use it, Agatha Brown, you know, and it's there primarily for my music. Mm. So if, you know, I wasn't going to accept, you know, people getting in touch or liking the page or getting involved in some way, shape or form, then, you know, I was going to cut my nose off to spite my face, because no matter what happened, whether, you know, I work on Outlander for years or I don't, or whatever happens, I'm still going to be playing music. So at the end of the day, you know, I wasn't actually thinking about it selfishly, but I look back now and go, that was a good move either way, because obviously I'll take a following musically out of this no matter what happens, you know. You can see where I'm coming from on that, you know. It makes sense even from a pragmatic kind of point of view. But I mean, that was never my thinking at the time. It was literally just, wow, you know, holy crap, you know, I've acquired 800 likes on my Facebook within a weekend, practically. and then, you know, I've now got 2,000 Twitter followers. And my main concern was really just, I might actually have to learn to use Twitter now, you know.
You're all, wait, people are going to be reading this now. No, but I think that we have a habit of quietly following people.
Aye.
Because we like to keep them our little hidden secret. And then if somebody finds out, and then they blow up. But, you know, we're always happy to have that happen. Yeah. But we like to quietly have our little secret bubble.
Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, it's just as well that we're talking about social media, because if you just said that exact thing you just said there about 20 years ago, I just like to quietly follow people.
And right?
you know, secret, and then if people find it, they blow up.
That's awful.
You
just outed me as a stalker, Agam.
Wow. No. It's a fine line, and it's not about you, oh, I deserve XYZ because I found someone. No, it's not about finding or discovering or it's not a race. But I think there definitely, I mean, you've seen it. There definitely is that thing of an Outlander effect. I mean, maybe there's a better term for it, but at least we've seen it with almost anyone who has been ID'd as being part of the production in some way. They, once they're identified, and especially once it can be confirmed, people flock to that and just have to follow. And it's all, I think, from a very good, genuine place, and their fans, and it's pure excitement.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know it's funny that, because I suppose as well, you know, people are used to, kind of beavering away in their own routine and what they do and what they believe to be important. And even if you're involved in a project that quite clearly on the face of it values certain aspects of whatever it is, it's, you know, whatever discipline people are involved in, whether it's a cultural thing, a language thing, or whether it's to do with whether you're in camera or a grip or a runner or sound or whatever, do you know what I mean? It's like you're just cracking away. You know you're probably pretty good at what you do, but it's a job, and, you know, sure, some productions you enjoy working on more than others, but at the end of the day, it's just what you do. And despite the fact that you might be quite aware of it at times, because you might have a reason to be so, perhaps you feel your skills aren't being recognised, or, you know, you feel you're actually quite a good place in your career, whatever your situation is, you're still just thinking, yeah, but this is just me, it's what I do. And so it's always a fantastic thing when people come along and they say, by the way, I really appreciate what you're up to here. And that was a fantastic thing for me, especially those first 2 or 3 weeks. I was absolutely, I spent the entire 3 weeks probably scarlet with a kind of, you know, sort of embarrassment of it, but in the best possible way, because I'm not very good with taking attention. And I mean, I probably, you know, not intentionally, but I probably use friendliness as a defense mechanism, because if I just treat people exactly how they're treating me and just as human beings, then that allows me to continue doing that. And that's where I'm most comfortable. Whereas if I just go, oh, yes, of course, thank you very much. Why? That's wonderful. Yeah, now sling your hook, you know. Then immediately you're putting up barriers, and you're almost sort of like accepting, you know, some kind of elevated status. Whereas for me, like I said, it's nothing to do with me. It's the work, it's the language, it's the culture, it's the mission. It's what can come of this that could be good for Scotland and our culture and our languages. And if being a conduit for that, even socially, you know, it could help that along, then I'm in the zone. And then, of course, the final point to make, the most important one really, is though, what, like I said earlier on, when you find out that people are so damn nice and they're just lovely to chat with, and it's a pleasure to just tweet back and forth, well, it's no chore. You know what I mean? I can tell you that it's no chore. You know?
And that's one of the great things I've seen about this production, though, is the reverence they've given, not to you per se, but to the Gaelic and to the
and to the
just the authenticity they're trying to give this production, is that they did put you. It wasn't just, hey, let's throw Sam out there and have him speak some Gaelic. They were like, let's introduce you to our Gaelic consultant.
This is the man who makes
all of our people look so great.
Well, you know, but it's a funny thing, though. I was just thinking again the other day, it just struck me again the other day that, you know, the production, I reckon, hasn't just cast people because they look good and they sound good and they're good actors and they've got a gravitas or charisma or whatever. I don't think there's any doubt about the fact that these people we're working with just now are cast because they're really good people. They're really nice people. We don't have a diva amongst them, and that's a fantastic thing to be able to say. You know, I mean, you know, for heaven's sake, you know, you constantly hear about people who, you know, are doing well in their careers, and then they suddenly turn around and start acting like, you know, idiots. And this is the fantastic thing. You know, everyone just feels like they're part of what's going on and that we're all working towards the same goal. Do you know what I mean? And despite the fact that, yes, you know, self-confessed, absolutely, I'm a damn good teacher, you know, and that's what I was hired to do. I'm working with people who have never, ever given me any crap about the fact that sometimes I've ridden them pretty hard about getting stuff right. Sometimes I'll be going, no, I want to hear that line again. And it's the 17th time they've said it. And you could imagine them turning around going, right, to heck with this. I'm out of here. I'm the actor. I'm the star. I'm out of here. I'm not doing this anymore. Nah, you wouldn't get that off any of these guys. They are professionals, but they're also really good people. And they understand what's at stake. And they also understand what's at stake culturally as well. They're very, very happy and very proud to be involved in helping that along. And that's a great thing. You know, it's a very communal atmosphere about this whole thing. And it's the same in the work. I mean, the crew is magic. They're lovely people, absolutely brilliant to work with. Dedicated professionals. I mean, there's some folk there who, you know, they're like machines. They're so good at what they do. Do you know what I mean? I'm always just wanting to stoat around and, you know, enjoy my work and have a chat with people. And, you know, even if it's a hard slog some days, you know, and there's a lot on. But the crew are just so dedicated, you know, it's incredible.
We were able to speak a little bit with Matt B. Roberts and Meryl Davis and a few other, maybe I think Ira Bear was there, but a few other writers at the January fan event.
Cool. Uh-huh.
And then again at the premiere in San Diego, we were also able to chat with Meryl.
Good.
And just this underlying or theme that goes through everything that you just touched on is that every single person, even if they had never heard of the books,
yeah,
but now they have and hopefully have read, et cetera, this seems not just of the talent and dedication, but like the most amazing, magical job that anyone who is involved with it has had the opportunity to be involved with.
Yeah, you see, it's interesting that because what you tend to find is, right, see, new crew will come in and all that work face on, and they'll be going, oh, crap, I'm at work, you know? And I'd see within a few weeks, they're going, hey, this isn't half bad, by the way. You know, and I'm like, yeah, it's really not half bad, you know? And then, like, you know, a couple of months later, they're going, there's definitely worse places to be. And I go, you're getting there, aren't you? You're getting there. And then the next thing, you know, you turn around in the coffee queue and they're standing behind you with a coffee across stitch open at the middle.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's that exact thing has happened, I would say, several times now, you know.
Well, we are just happy that you're obviously part of it, that you're so open and communicative with us. I won't say hardcore fans, but you know, with
long term
you can be long term and not be hardcore.
I would say that we're pretty hardcore. I mean, we created a podcast because we wanted to talk about it so badly.
But a year before the show started.
Yeah.
We're definitely committed. Okay, so Agav here has generously...
Well, okay, we should give a little background. There was a little Twitter back and forth a while ago when this first came up.
Someone was talking about something, and I just saw, I think, one of your tweets come up, Agav.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just looked at it, and I started following the back and forth. And it was about a poem, and I don't think I really knew at first what it was. But I saw your tweet say something like, how could I share this? And that's kind of when I jumped in.
You're like...
And I said, well, we have podcasts. So what was...
And only after that did she realize that this whole thing was about a poem about a penis.
And I was so red, you would never... I didn't know that I was asking you to perform a penis poem.
Penis poem.
Sorry. I can speak different languages, but when it comes to English, I can be quite, not prudy,
Victorian?
Shy. Not Victorian,
oh,
shy.
All right.
So, all that having been said, tell us about this poem.
Don't worry, I'll I'll get to tip the penis shortly, you know. Obviously, I'll need to recite this verse, you know. But well, I think Diana managed to slip it into the book, didn't she? She slipped this penis into the book. I think that's the.
Did you plan that?
You planned that?
No. I take my cue from Diana, and Diana's pretty direct with her humor. So you know, if it's okay with Diana, it's pretty much all right with me. Yeah, I mean, she just sort of said somebody had sent her it through and basically said, you know, you need to use this. You need to get this this in praise of the excellent penis in there. And she was like, well, okay, sure, why not? yeah, I mean, obviously, nowadays the gales are seen as being quite kind of polite and, you know, don't talk about that sort of thing and all this. And some are quite religious and, you know, but back in the day, I mean, it was certainly a lot less inhibited. So why don't I recite in praise of an excellent penis then? Is that not the best thing to do just
absolutely.
Now?
Absolutely. Go for it. Let's do it.
Okay, so here it goes. Yeah. Mulligan Sarvot. Habau ra'a shin sharut. Achoshid mila buoy. Sarvot ialach achkenyach. Ringier skatchach cruay. Ulyach feach fetanach. Lager shesavach buan. Bea traarach tokarach. Nach jultach bok na cruay. There you go.
Thank you very much. I don't want you to know that I'm reading the translation underneath the whole time and being like, that is, oh man. If somebody was reading that to me with the translation, I would be like,
you mean if they were saying that to you in English?
Oh, in English. Yeah, if it was the translated version, I think if somebody was saying that to my face, there would be so many levels of red on my skin.
And that's funny because my eyes were straight on the Gaelic, which of course I don't understand, so it's fine. Except things like ha, the verb to be, being in the first position. Nach, chan is a negative, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
negative. So nach is asking or saying isn't something. Or something is?
Oh, no. Let's see. Hang on a minute. I'll bring it back up again. Where, oh, ha. Ha, bal. Yeah. So, ha basically just, it's literally is, are. And the great thing about Gaelic languages is there's no sort of, you know, ich bin, du bist, ist. Yeah. You know, you don't have all those changes.
Conjugations, yeah.
Ha, yeah. It doesn't conjugate at all. It's just ha. So it's brilliant. It's so simple. People always go on about it being so difficult, but I mean that is one of the most fantastically simple things about it. It changes if you're asking a question. There's a question particle, and then there's a negative particle, and then there's a negative question particle. But it doesn't change depending on who's speaking or who's doing whatever's happening. It doesn't make any difference. Yeah. So that's pretty good. But I really laughed the other day when I read it over again when you sent it through. Fetanach, you know, chanter like. I just thought, yes, that man's on the ball. He's on the ball.
Like the whole thing, like, I'm not even going to go there, but like the whole thing, I can't even pick one thing. Maybe my favorite part is, where is it? I swear there was, leathery.
I was about to say
leathery. And leathery.
I mean, you know, you really want to know like what that guy's penis has been exposed to over the years to become leather. You know, I mean, you know, what's going on here? What is he doing? Where is he putting that thing, you know?
This was definitely written by someone who was in a kilt and had it exposed to all the elements to have it be leathery.
That's exactly it.
Well, thank you for sharing that with
us. And putting up with us for requesting that.
Yeah. And
no
problem. For a few, we hope it's fun for you. You did mention a little bit about your talent for accents. You mentioned something called an accent tour of England. Would you take us on a tour of England?
I'd probably just say England fairly randomly because I can probably do quite a few accents from England, you know.
Sure.
If we were having Essex, we'd be speaking like that. Everything would be like, oh my God, it's amazing. So that's like Essex, isn't it? And then go from there, go in East End of London, it's like really strong, know what I mean? So they speak like that. It's like really, really like, you know, straight up, mate, know what I mean? And then you go over at West Country, you know, over to Devon or Cornwall or maybe Wiltshire, places like that, Somerset and Dorset, they speak like that. We've got a strange sort of lilt that comes out like that. Up to Liverpool, Liverpool's like that. Well, everyone's seen interviews with the Beatles, but their accents are quite sort of like tame, you know. So yeah, people from the schemes, from, you know, from like, they live out in housing estates and that sort of thing, they all speak like that, you know, and they've got particular things that come from Welsh, because there's a high influx of them into the place. And then over to Manchester, you're into Lancashire there, and you're a bit more like that. And if you go out from Lancashire, from Manchester and Salford and places like that, and Bolton, you go over to Yorkshire, it becomes even deeper, and the accent becomes even stronger like that. And then you end up with Newcastle, man. And Newcastle's a totally different kettle of fish altogether, man. It's a real interesting accent. But people from Sunderland and from Newcastle, they speak differently. But I wouldn't be able to tell you what the difference was. But roughly, that's a sort of Newcastle thing there. So that's you kind of went through England, you know, had a wee kind of
estate. I feel like we just interviewed One Direction. Like the entire band of One Direction.
Aye, aye, that's it. I didn't do very well getting the difference between Essex and just London there. I didn't quite settle into that one, but the other ones weren't too bad.
Well, they're much better than we would have produced. We wouldn't have even wanted to embarrass ourselves, even for fun. Even though we think people would laugh a lot at us, no. We don't have that kind of...
No, I think it's the difference, though, is that, like, for instance, you hear, like, 8 or 100 different English accents, and a lot of people only hear, like, one American accent, and they all do standard American, whereas there's regional accents throughout the entire, you know, United States.
Of course.
Yeah. He knows those, too, so...
I'm sure he does.
So take us on a trip around the U.S.
Oh, well, I mean, it just depends where you want to go. One thing that I noticed about a standard American accent is that all the sentences go up at the end. I don't know why, but the intonation in American accents, especially in California, everyone says, "Hi, how are you?" And I was talking to someone the other day about your work. All right. You know, and it's this kind of, I don't know, someone maybe could read it as like false enthusiasm or something, you know, but I don't think it is that. It's just like, that's the accent. That's just the way it is. That's how it works. And all the senses go right up at the end, even when it's not questioned.
To me, though, that's almost a Canadian thing, or a very northern United States, like Minnesota, like that, with that going up at the end.
Oh, maybe, but it's definitely a different accent.
So I feel like I just did that.
You did do it.
Going up at the end?
Definitely California as well. Definitely LA. Definitely.
In trying to prove you wrong, she actually proved you right.
Oh, I'm tired.
You had a little bit of a Valley Girl in there, eh?
Yeah, but I'd say it's very different from New York. New York, it's got much more attack. It's got much more kind of pizzazz. You know, it's it comes from the fact that the city is very lively. You know, people are running around, are doing things. It's crazy. It's a happening hip kind of atmosphere. And so the accent kind of reflects that as well. You know,
they also don't have time for that.
Don't ask me to go up there. Don't ask me to go up to Boston. I don't know what the difference is there. Interesting.
Park the car in the yard.
That is the quack. Yeah, park the quack in the yard. Yeah. But not quite that one yet. I need to listen to that one, see if I can get it. But something that I find quite fascinating is, you know, the way Southern accents work. And I seen a YouTube video, you know, as the fact myself and a few of the fans were chatting about it. It was really interesting. And it was a guy talking about where accents come from in the South. So he started out by saying, just imagine you're speaking what people might regard as a kind of a proper Southern accent. So, you know, it's that kind of, I do declare that I'm speaking in a Southern accent. And it's that sort of thing where it's a non-rhotic, so they don't pronounce the R's. It's that sort of educated Southern accent like that. And if you just adapt it slightly, suddenly you're into RP English. And it goes in absolutely effortlessly from you know, Southern American English into
yes,
very polite sort of British accent, you know.
Absolutely. I've actually heard from I don't know, the linguist, or I'm sure someone, linguist historian, I've actually heard that the American, or one, or as a belt, a geographic belt, as a linguistic or a dialect area or accent area,
mm-hmm.
that is actually closer to Shakespearean English than we have. Not the language spoken, but the accent.
I'd heard something similar myself, in fact. Yeah, and I find a lot of the grammatical usages in the South really interesting as well. And people just think, oh, you know, that's such a slang thing or whatever. And the chances are, you know, a lot of these usages could go back a lot further than the English that we're used to speaking, and certainly in the UK today, you know. And also the correlation. The other thing in the video that I really enjoyed was the fact that he managed to correlate Appalachia with Northern Ireland. You know, Northern Ireland, it's quite a kind of rough, quite a sort of, I don't know how you'd say it, like a stark sort of accent. It's like that, you know. It's sort of words get cut off at the end, like that, you know. It doesn't have that same lilt that it does in the city. And they say that if y'all take that over to Appalachia, then y'all can see where the accent come from Northern Irish, do you know what I mean? That's that erratic thing where they're pronouncing the R's. If y'all speak like that in a certain accent, you pronounce your R's, then it comes out just like Northern Irish. And that's because the Scotch Irish came over and settled in the Appalachian Mountains, and that's what happened. That's the history. So
true.
It's great, though, that, because I'd never thought about that in my life before. And just watching this video pointed that out, and I've never been able to get out of my head. And everybody I've spoken to about it finds it fascinating ever since, you know.
I did a really random show when I was doing theater, where I had to play in the first act, I was a proper British woman. And then in the second act, we had to drop that facade and become this totally separate person, because all of the actors were actually actors on stage playing this other part. And in the second act, I was supposed to be Southern. And I just automatically went to like this broad, like Southern accent, like straight out of Gone with the Wind. And the director was like, no. I want you less Gone with the Wind, because it was way too close to my British accent.
Right.
He was like, I need you more trailer. So I had to clip all of the endings of my phrases to make them much shorter and be like, instead of being like, I'm in the South and everything's fine, I had to be like, well, I am in the South and everything is fine. Like, I had to cut everything off.
Yeah.
He was like, no, they're way too close. You need to totally break it up and make it different.
Oh, it's incredible the subtleties that are in there between accents, you know, and that, I mean, you could, you know, spend a lifetime doing that kind of thing. And people do, you know, some absolute geniuses out there have made an absolute art of learn this kind of thing. And our dialect coach on set is absolutely tremendous as well. You know, she'll take you on a tour of the world, you know.
Thank you so incredibly much, Agav, for joining us. And it's been a pleasure. And I know you are busy with family and busy with your lovely, lovely job, which we, not too jealous of, but just a little bit, as I say, jealous with love. And congratulations on everything. Thank you so much for taking such care and for bringing your passion, melding your passion with the passion of those others on production.
It's something new every day, you know, even a year down the line. Still get new stuff coming up, new challenges, new interests and mixes of skills and experiences and all that, you know. And so we now know there's going to be a next year. Looking for to be involved in that, if there's potential for it, if there's Gaelic stuff coming up again, you know, we'll see what happens.
There's a whole book out, you could go read it. I promise you, they come back to Scotland.
So yes, we hope so as well. And we hope that should the opportunity arise, that you could come back for another wee chat in the future.
I can see that happening.
Well, very nice. Then I'll have to, next time that happens, I will have to bring my a drinky as well, an alcopop or something.
Thank you. Well, bye.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and have a wonderful evening and a great week back at work.
Yeah, you guys too. I hope whatever you're up to this week's enjoyable.
Thank you very much.
Look forward to catching up with you soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
have a great night.
Bye.
Bye.
Another kind of cool thing that we love about what Agav does, besides his passion for Scotland and Outlander and his job and his calling, is his music, which we've discussed a little bit in our previous interview with him in the first part. And now we'd like to share with you one of his unique
things, and that is that he takes songs that are in, I guess, common standard English, what have you, in pop songs, country songs, whatever. He takes a song and translates it into Scots. And here is Ago's rendition of Willie Nelson's Always On My Mind.
Maybe we that need treachy. Just as good as we should hear. Maybe we that need lowy. Just as oft as we could hear. Are the things that were nae said and done. We just warn agreed the time, but you are always on our mind. Maybe we that ne hod ye in the lonely years. And I guess we never tell she. We're say son say that you're ours. If we marked you feel like second best, we're say sorry we were blind, but you are always on our mind. You are always on. Tell me that your spirit has need. Eat me. One more chance to help you break. Ties, 'cause you'll be always on our mind. Oh, you'll be always on our mind. And you'll be always on our mind. You'll be always on our mind. You'll be always on our mind. Said and done. There's never been a better time, for you'll be always on our mind.
We just wanted to say again, thank you so much, Aga, for spending some of your very precious time with us. We really appreciate it, and we had a great time.
And please, go check out our commentary track for the Outlanders episodes 1 and 2 on gopop.tv.
Go check out our non-live live tweets. Okay, thank you so much for listening, everyone. We are planning to get back to our read-along next week.
Be ready.
It'll be Chapter 6 of Dragonfly and Amber. Hope to have you back with us. Thank you so much, and have a great week. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night. That
my young